Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 341, and we're going to continue now with Numbers 21 and verse 14, where we read the history of Israel as they traveled through the wilderness, and about a certain book that was written. And obviously, a lot of books were written in the Bible by several personalities, and we do not necessarily have all of them. And when it came to canonizing the Bible, whoever did it, different times, that did not necessarily include everything, just like John made it very plain, that other things, many things, Jesus Christ has said and done, that if it was all recorded, he said, I suppose even the whole world would not be able to contain it. So God is not necessarily interested in recording everything that was ever done or said, even by him. And what he gave us should be enough for the purpose. And unfortunately, some people take advantage of that, and they come up with supposedly old books that were never known before, that were hidden and things like that. And often, they're just perversions of people that have invented those kind of things and claim that those are the hidden or lost books. A lot of people, you know, fall for it. And in verse 14, we read there, by the way, before I continue that, when I was listening to the tape of last time, the last lesson, I noticed that I made a couple of misquotes there. I misquoted a couple of things. And one is, I was talking about Ezekiel 20, that describe the history of the people of Israel, and also those people that God is going to bring into the land, and is going to purge them and not allow them. And by mistake, I said Isaiah 20. It's Ezekiel 20. And also in Ezekiel 35 and 36, speaking about Edom. It's not Isaiah 35, 36. Just wanted to make this correction. So we'll continue here with verse 14, where we read in chapter 21 of Numbers, wherefore it is said in the book of the wars of the Lord. So there was a book where it has been recorded all the things that God was involved in when it came to the wars that God waged against his enemies, the enemies of Israel, that God was involved in it. And that was a special book that was written there, and obviously we don't have any trace of that, as we read in the commentary about the book of the wars of the Lord. The lines from that book quoted here support the statement that Arnon was the border of Moab. And there is no further mention of this book in the whole scripture. That's the only place where you read that. And some of the commentaries say that it was an independent book in which were written the records of the wars waged by God on behalf of those that fear him. And many books have been lost and are no longer extant among us. And for example, they know the words of Nathan the Edo and the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel that are mentioned several times. But nobody has those books. And evidently, it was a collection of ballads and songs. The books of the wars of the Lord, like the Sefer HaYashar, you know, that is a righteous book that is mentioned in Joshua, chapter 10, verse 13, and Samuel, chapter 1, verse 18, is a proof that there was no absence of literary activity in the days of Moses. So many of those books were written in the days of Moses, and later on, after all, an awful lot of things happened in the wilderness. And really, you don't really know much about what was happening in the wilderness for 40 years, except, you know, several things that God chose to have recorded. But history, ancient history, you know, some records, some fragments of it, tell us about quite a few things happening there, where some parts of some groups of Israelites just bolted out, you know, just left the wilderness and went their own way, went here and went there, and did not remain there during all that time, did not necessarily wait until they could enter into the land. You see, in other words, they were not interested in spending 40 years in the wilderness, so they began doing their own thing. And obviously, that was not recorded. And so, many other things like that. So, when we come across, you know, certain books, and several times we read about them, we should realize that it was not the intent of God to preserve everything that was written about his people or things that he had done. No more than it was the intent of Jesus Christ to even preserve all the things that he had done or said. And the apostles didn't do it. You see, they deliberately didn't do it. And the prophets of God deliberately did not include everything there. You see. And the people that lived at the time knew about it, and probably for several centuries that knowledge was retained. But it was not a record that God wanted kept from generation to generation to be preserved until this very day. And what he wanted, he made sure that people do it. And that's what the Bible is all about nowadays. It's just the record that God wanted preserved. But does not mean that many other things were not said or done. And maybe one of these days, God is going to make it possible for us to know all the rest of the story. And obviously, when we see those people who were alive at the time, we're going to have first-hand account anyway. But this is what we read here in verse 14. Wherefore it is said in the book of the words of the Lord, so here it is a quote from it, Vahev and Sufa, these are two different places there. And Sufa means storm, and the valleys of Arnon, and the slope of the valleys that inclines toward the seat of Ar, and leaneth upon the border of Moab. And that's the only thing they quoted from that book. And God was not interested in all the other details. And verse 16 we continue. And from thence to Beer, that is, in the well whereof the Lord said unto Moses, gather the people together, and I will give them water. Then sang Israel this song. Spring up, O well, sing you unto it, the well which the princes digged, which the nobles of the people delved with the scepter and with their staves. In the old days, many of the... actually, it's done to this very day. And the scriptures in the Bible, when you go to the synagogue, you don't read them, you chant them. And much of the information at the time, literary information and histories and things that happened, were all chanted. And that's how they were being passed on from generation to generation. Today, obviously, they don't do it. People just go and read a book. But in the old days, a lot of things were not written. You see, there were sort of old traditions passed on from generation to generation until some people decided to record them. But people used to chant them, and so they passed them on. And songs, you know, you can sing songs for many, many years. And so, very ancient songs, you know, if you just chant them and teach your kids the same, and then, you know, they teach their kids that way, and so they're being passed on that way. In the old days, that's how they passed histories from generation to generation. And genealogies and all kinds of events that happen in the tribe, in the nation, the family, personal experiences. And so we continue here in verse 18. And from the wilderness of Matana means a gift, verse 19. And from Matana to Nachliel, and from Nachliel to Bamot, and from Bamot means a stage, place where people used to offer sacrifices. You hear it a lot in the Kings, where God wanted them to get rid of the Bamot, where they used to offer places, and do it only in Jerusalem. It's a high elevated area. And so this place was called Bamot because apparently they had those places there where they offered the sacrifices. The high places, they call them in English. And so from Bamot to the valley that is in the field of Moab by the top of Pisgah, which looks down upon the desert. And so the description here is given of travels. Today it's far away, so it doesn't mean much to many people. But if you live there during that time, and centuries later in those very areas, this is relevant to them. It's meaningful, and these people will be alive again. It will be meaningful again to them. And so, a lot of important things that God said and had done, and miracles and wonders and statements and all that, He didn't choose to record, but He chose to record this kind of things. And, you know, sometimes you wonder, why this and not that? Well, that's the way God recorded, and that's the way it is. This became a part of the Word of God, that is the recorded Word of God. Others became part of the folklore and the oral traditions. And yet they were just as valid as the recorded one. That's assuming that they were not perverted and changed. And so in chapter 21, verse 21, now we continue. And Israel sent messengers unto Sihon, king of the Amorites, saying, the same thing as it said to Edom, and there are certain people there that God says, don't touch them. You know, I'm not going to give you their territory. And that's basically Edom and Moab and Ammon, you see, who are the children of Lot, the nephew of Abraham and his adopted son. And Edom was obviously, you know, Esau, the twin brother of Jacob. So with the exception of these three, God basically told them, you destroy everyone in sight. Leave nothing alive. And so, first, as they come to this territory here, they try to just
gain passage through that territory, but obviously God had the intent of destroying these people. And yet that's the way they began. And they told him, let me pass through your land. We will not turn aside into the field or into a vineyard. We will not drink of the water of the wells. We will go by the king's highway. We're talking now about going higher above the territory of Edom, northward, and closer to Moab, which is more or less above the Dead Sea, east of the Dead Sea. And they're asking him to make it possible for them to go through his territory, because much of the land that they were going to have was on the other side of the river, you see. But on the other hand also, because of the wickedness of this people, God was going to destroy them and give that land to a part of the tribes of Israel. And so this is what we see here. This is the background. So let's say we're not going to walk all over your field, you know, just go through the highway, you know, the central road, until we have passed your border. And Sihon would not suffer Israel to pass through his border, but Sihon gathered all his people together and went out against Israel into the wilderness and came to Jahaz, and he fought against Israel. Now, Sihon thought, well, king of Edom refused them passage, and they just went around. You see, he just came and threatened them with his army, and, you know, just do the same and get rid of them that way. Well, what he didn't realize, he was not Edom, and he was not Moab or Ammon, and God did not feel the same way toward him, and therefore it was a very bad mistake on his part. Because the end of that, and result of this attempt to fight Israel, and he fought them, actually, he began, you know, the battle here. And then the end result of that was that, verse 24, and Israel smote him with the edge of the sword and possessed his land from the Arnon unto the Yabbok, even unto the children of Ammon. So all the territory below Ammon was inhabited by the Amorites. King Sihon here, which was known to be a giant, and they destroyed him, and that land was given to some of the tribes of Israel at the time, Manasseh, Ephraim, and Gad, and of course the territory above Moab. Verse 25, and Israel took all the cities, and Israel dwelt in all the cities of the Amorites. So here it is, before they enter into the land, take over that fertile land, you see, and they dwell there during that period of time while they were in that area. And so they dwelt in all those cities. For Heshbon was the city of Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who had fought against the former king of Moab, and taken all his land out of his hand, even unto Arnon. So that land, you see, originally God was not intending to give it to his own people, because that was the land of Moab, which was taken by the king of Sihon from Moab. And God already told them, he's not going to give them any. That is of Ammon. He's not going to give them any of the territory of either Ammon or Moab. And yet, because it was inhabited all this time by King Sihon, and he fought against Israel, well, he lost that land, and that land became a part of the tribal land of Israel, where otherwise would have still been in the hand of Moab or Ammon later on. And so they took it, and that became theirs. And wherefore, they speak in parables, say, come you to Heshbon, let the city of Sihon be built and established. For a fire is gone out of Heshbon, a flame from the city of Sihon. It has devoured Ar of Moab, the lords of the high places of Arnon. Woe to thee, Moab, you are undone, O people of Chemosh. That's the god that they worshipped. And unfortunately, later on, the children of Israel did likewise. He has given his sons as fugitives, in other words, he didn't defend them, couldn't defend them, and his daughters into captivity. And that's basically what happened to these people. Children of Israel destroyed the men, took the women to themselves, and they were in captivity, obviously, in the beginning, but after that they integrated into the people of Israel, the nation. And we read here, and unto Sihon, king of the Amorites, we have shattered them, Heshbon is perished, even unto Dibon, and we have laid waste even unto Nopha. which reaches unto Medabah. So that was a song that they sang, that they chanted, because of that victory that God gave them against his people. And for some time to come, you know, they kept singing this song, chanting it, in commemoration of this song. Well, that's the way it was done in the old days, the composed songs, just like they still do today. Many songs, you know, war songs that you hear, and some people still like to sing them. You know, like from Tipperary and all these kind of things. This is basically what they were doing here, and God chose to record it because he was involved in this victory that he gave to his people Israel. So that's a part of the Torah, war songs, songs of victory. You see, all kind of things, and folklore, and poetry, you see. Some people think the law is code of law, you see. That is, the Torah is a code of law. Well, code of law is only a part of it. The majority of the Torah has nothing to do with the code of law. And just history and things that happen, and attitudes and behavior, and wars, and all kind of things like that. Verse 31, thus Israel dwelt in the land of the Amorites, and Moses sent to spy out Jazer, or Jazer, a city that was in that area. And this is what we read here. He was going to conquer that place also, so he sent spies. And they took the towns thereof and drove out the Amorites that were there. So they went and spied on that city. They found out, you know, what it was all about, and then they sent the army, and they took over that place. Verse 33, and they turned and went up by the way of Bashan. That's going higher there, up north, and Bashan became the territory of Manasseh, all the way up to Lebanon, including part of Lebanon. And Og, the king of Bashan, now Og was a giant, went out against them. And today when you see a tall person in Israel, that's what you call him, Og, king of Bashan. And he and all his people to battle to Edrei. Again, kings around Moab and Ammon, either below them or above them. And their territory was not forbidden to Israel, and so God would allow them to go and conquer those people and take it over. And he gave it ultimately to the two and a half tribes of Israel, Manasseh, Reuben, and Gad. And in the process of that, as time went by, these two and a half tribes developed camaraderie, developed a mutual culture, at least with many similarities. And as they traveled later on, after the captivity and exile, they still stuck together to a degree. And so you find a lot of present days, we know them, like in the New Orleans area and places like that, you find a mixture of Manassites and French. You see people of Reuben and people of Gad, and you find them in Europe likewise. You see, they did not all go with their, you know, like the Manassites did not all go with the other Manassites on the other side of the border as they traveled. And so some Manassites here had more links with the French, what became known as the French, you know, French people, the people of Reuben, France, and they remained actually in Europe, and France and then northern Germany, and that's how they ended up there in northern Germany instead of England, and then from there they came over here, and a lot of people think they are Germans, and they're not Germans. They're the people of Manasseh, that of this half, that remained close to their brothers from Reuben and Gad. So in a sort of a background to ancient history, one of these days all these things are going to be recorded in the proper order and everybody would know all these details. It's going to be a very fascinating history. And all people would know where they came from and who they are and why they ended up where they were. And so we read about this king. He comes against Israel and they turned... we're in verse 34. And our king of Bashan went out against them and all of his people to battle Edrei. And so in verse 34 we read, and the Lord said unto Moses, fear him not, for I have delivered him into your hand, and all his people, and his land, and ye shall do to him as you did unto Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwell at Heshbon. So God intended to give that land to some of the tribes of Israel on this side of the border, and therefore He allows Israel to go and smite these people. In verse 35, so we read, so they smote him and his sons and all his people until there was none left him remaining, and they possessed his land. And so we don't read in this case on this side of the Jordan where they totally killed everybody. You see, it says, and they smote his sons and his people, and oftentimes the daughters were taken captive. In this case, that is the young ones and little children. While in the land itself, among the Canaanites, Moses commanded them, and God commanded them to totally destroy them, not take any, you know, anybody captive, not children, not little girls, whatever. And then we read 9, chapter 22, and the children of Israel journeyed and pitched in the plains of Moab beyond the Jordan at Jericho. So now they are by Jericho, and they're going to have a major problem now with the king of Ammon and Balaam, and the false prophet, you know, Balaam. And so we're going to have now about two, three chapters that deal with this issue. Actually, there will be another two chapters that deal with the outcome of what was going to happen here. Well, now the children of Israel are right on the border there, not far from where they were supposed to enter into the land by Jericho. And Moab and Ammon, obviously, they're very worried about it, thinking they're going to destroy them, because they do not know that God told them, do not touch the territory or the land of Moab and Ammon, you see. They know that they did not touch Edom because he came out with the army, but they knew that they have destroyed all the nations all around them. So they were afraid that was their fate. And instead of finding out, but they know they did not. And so they thought, well, we cannot fight the people of Israel, so we're going to come up with a different scheme. This is basically what we're going to read here. And in the process, which is something very strange, God is using a prophet from Babylon that obviously he was acquainted with and he dealt with, and, you know, we don't fully comprehend everything. Why is it that God is dealing with a prophet? Is, you know, at this point we're going to call him a false prophet. Well, false prophet, when you think about it, everything that he said here during this this prophecy is here, nothing was false about it. Whatever God told him, he said. So, you might say, in this case, he was a true prophet, but he was a covetous man, a greedy man, and he said basically what God told him. And he comes from Babylon, and of course, there is a lot of information behind it, a lot of background, because when you go to the story of the descendants of Esau in Genesis, I believe Genesis 36, the story of the kings of Esau of Edom, you see, that were there long before Israel came back to the land, you find out that there was a person there with a similar name, with the same family name as this prophet, Beor, Balaam from Pethor, or Beor, you see, it was said two different ways, either Pethor or Beor. It could be somebody from the same family, and coming from the same territory. And so this could be a relative, you see, an Edomite, in other words, because it comes from the same territory where by that time there were also already Edomites there. Because one of the kings that reigned over Edom came from that territory where Balaam came from. And so we know the Edomites began to spread all around because, again, began to multiply, and there were people of cattle, and there were men of war. And Babylon was a natural place for them to be because that's where their ancestors come from, Abraham, you see, and the mothers, you see, Rebecca came from there, and then Rachel came from there, and you see, Rebecca was the mother of Esau. So, if you know, it was natural for them to drift into that area, and you know, the area of course, you know, they were from up north, but they all came from down south. From Babylon itself, before they went up north to Haran in Assyria, that became their own Assyria, and then came down into the land of Canaan. And so Edomites ended up in that area, and this is where the prophet is coming from, which means that he had knowledge of God. You see, if he's the son of Edom, and Edom was a twin brother of Jacob, they knew the God of Israel. They had, you know, relationship with him, at least, you know, through their father. So knowledge was there, and apparently this man is in that category. A person that knew God, and to begin with, Babylon had quite a bit of information still of the law of God, because the sons of Noah ended up there, the whole family of Noah ended up there. So it was natural for them to still have a measure of knowledge and understanding. And that's what the Code of Hammurabi is all about, where there are many laws that later on were found also in the law of Moses, for the simple reason those were laws of God that had been known from the beginning of time. And so when you think about that, then it's not strange that here is a man that later on they had to kill because of his greed and, you know, the evil advice that he gave to the people of Moab and Ammon and Midian. And yet this man knew God, and God spoke to him and didn't look upon it as strange, you know, that God comes to talk to him in a dream. So those things, you know, God did not choose to record the background, but, you know, when you study many other scriptures and put them all together, you begin to piece together quite a picture there. And so this is where we find ourselves here, you know, with the children of Israel in chapter 22 and verse 2. And Balak, the son of Zippor, and Zippor means bird, and his name was Balak, and he was the king here, obviously, and he was the king of Moab, and so he saw what Israel had done to the Amorites, and they were powerful people, and Moab was sore afraid of the people, because there were many, and Moab was overcome with dread because of the children of Israel. And I really didn't have to worry about it, you see, since God was not going to allow Israel to conquer his territory. But by this time, we are talking about people that have drifted away from the religion of their father, Lot, a righteous man, you see, just Lot, and from the God of Israel, and they were so much into idolatry, you know, the people around them. They assumed, you know, the same religion, or the religions that were around, and they were so far away from God, and far away from this knowledge and understanding that they're all relatives, they're all family members, and they're not going to kill each other. But obviously they didn't think that way, and they did not think about the fact that they did not touch Edom. They could have. They did not fight against him. Well, in either case, that's the way it happened here. And even then, God would not allow the people of Israel to destroy Moab or Ammon and take their land away from them. And so he's very afraid, not knowing all these things, because there were many. Children of Israel were many, many people, a few millions of them. And Moab was overcome with dread because of the children of Israel. And Moab said unto the elders of Midian. Now the Midianites lived nearby there. And the Midianites who were there, they were the children of Keturah, again, sons of Abraham. So, you know, they're all relatives, you see. And Midian also is a part of, when you think about it, the father-in-law of Moses was a Midianite. So these people are related, but as time goes by, you know, people lose contact with each other and the family relations of the head, and become loose from each other, and they begin to develop their own separate identities and religions and all that. And this is what we find here. Basically, they say, oh, relatives of Abraham, and this whole story is about relatives of Abraham who are not behaving themselves properly. They should have remained in the faith of Abraham, and all these things would not have happened. That's in essence what you have today in the Middle East. Had they all obeyed and walked in the commandments, in the way, in the path of Abraham, Father Abraham, all of them would have been doing very well. The whole land would have been paradise. Well, instead of that, they're all doing their own thing, and they're all being punished on either side of the border. And so Moab said unto the elders of Midian, now will this multitude lick up all that is around about us, as the ox licks up the grass of the field. You see the descriptive language, and that was very common in the old days, to use parables and to use poetic language when they spoke. They did not just use their dry language that we use today. They oftentimes used a lot of poetry in their talk. And Balak, the son of Zippor, was king of Moab at that time. And he sent messengers unto Balaam, the son of Beor, to Pethor. So, son of Beor, he comes from Pethor, which is by the river, in other words, the river Euphrates, and that was basically the territory where Edomites ended up. That's where Abraham came from originally, that area there. And one of the kings also of Edom, came from that, which means that there were Edomites there, as you read in Genesis 36, I believe, was it 38, somewhere there. We went through that when we went through Genesis and these personalities and where they came from. And so it's not strange for him to go back to somebody that is well known at the time and is also a relative and to ask him to come over and help a man that was known as the man of God. You see, the way they saw him, a man who is able to pronounce curses and blessings, a man that talked to God, a man to whom God spoke, and therefore he could do those kind of things. So there's a lot of background here that is not mentioned, but a man, unfortunately, also, that was willing to do things for filthy lucre, you see. And that's why one of the qualifications for the ministry or the leadership over God's people, in whatever capacity, is that they should be, you know, very careful about this quality of being greedy for filthy lucre, and they should abhor that. People should abhor bribes. And this prophet that could have been, you know, been a righteous prophet of God and walk only in righteousness, and obviously he'd done a lot of good things too, well, he gave himself to that, and that was his downfall. And so he sent messengers unto Balaam the son of Beor to Pethor, which is by the river, to the land of the children of his people, to call him. And who are his people? You see, if you don't have the background, you know, you may think, well, just Babylonians like anybody else. But when you consider all the scriptures that we mentioned here and also in other places in Lamentation, it talks about Edom that dwells in the land of Oz. That's where Job was, and that was in Babylon also. And he too probably was an Edomite. And so he had measure of knowledge and righteousness. And people around him also knew it. Of course, God does not choose at this point to say exactly the identity of the people, to identify these people, but you put things together and you get an idea there. And so he calls him from the children of his people, saying, behold, there is a people come out of Egypt. In other words, at this point, doesn't even tell them who. But by that time, the whole world in that area there knew about it. But he does not mention specific that these are the people of Israel. And he said, behold, they cover the face of the earth, and they abide over against me. Come now, therefore, I pray you, and curse me these people, for they are too mighty for me. Peradventure, I shall prevail that we may smite them, and that I may drive them out of the land. And mind you, all these things were totally unnecessary, because they were not about to attack Moab and Ammon. And yet, this is what happens when people have no relationship with God. Sometimes they're fearful of things that would never come upon them because they do not know God nor know His will. And how many times it happens to us too? We're worried about things that will never happen, you see. And Christ tells us, oh, you of little faith, don't be anxious, you know, about this and that and the other thing. That's what the Gentiles are, because they have no relationship with me and they do not trust in me. And so this is what we find here also. And he said, for I know that he whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed. Well, why would that happen? For the simple reason, this man was not just an idol worshiper having relationship with demons or Satan, things like that. This man was known as a man that had links with God, the God of heavens, where there's still a lot of information about this God in those days. And unfortunately, along with that also, that also worshipped idols. And that was the history of Israel. They worshipped God and also worshipped idols. And that was the family of Abraham too. They worshipped God, the God of heaven, the Creator, because all of them knew about Him. You see, the sons of, you know, the children of Noah were there to preserve knowledge and understanding. There was knowledge of the law and knowledge of God. But unfortunately, along with that, also, just in case, you know, in order to have something in hand, you know, like security blanket, they had their gods and idols. So there was a mixture there in the family of Abraham, and you know the rabbis and their misunderstanding of this whole aspect of the life of the family of Abraham. They thought, well, they were all idol worshippers. Yes, they were idol worshippers, but along the same line also they worshipped God, and so you would find a measure of righteousness or an unrighteousness mixed together, and sometimes there was more of this or more of that, depending on circumstances. And God wanted Abraham to totally come out of it and remain only with Him and not have a mixture. And of course, his children later on, unfortunately, did not follow in his footsteps, and they always mixed And they do to this very day. The knowledge of God and the knowledge of the God of this world. And so this is what we find here. A person that was having a relationship that apparently was more godly and less into idolatry, and so he was able to bless and able to curse, because you cannot really do it unless God is behind it. Verse 7, and the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian departed with the rewards of divination in their hand, and they came unto Balaam and spoke unto him the words of Balak. And so they wanted him to come and invoke the name of God. That's what the rewards of divination, make contact with God and basically pronounce a curse on them. So they called it the rewards of divination. And that's divination, that's in English. In Hebrew, you really get the real meaning of it. The word is not divination, but ksamim. And ksamim means magic. You see? Now, God is not interested in magic. You walk with Him, you pray to Him, He's pleased with your actions, and then He will do what you ask Him to do if it is, according to His will. But when people do not have a direct relationship with God, well, then they have to go into this world of mystery and magic and incantation and what they call, later on divination in English, and things like that. So they were not asking in that sense, as an Israelite would, just call upon God. But they use all kinds of other things. And that's the way the nations are. The more they departed from God, the more they were into these ideas that they have invented themselves. And this is what they asked him. And they came unto Balaam and spoke unto him the words of Balak. And he said unto them, now notice what he's saying to them. And that tells you about his relationship and where he's coming from. He said, lodge here this night, and I will bring you back word as the Eternal. And what Eternal is he talking about? As Jehovah. That's the one he's talking about. So here's prophet worshipping Jehovah, you see. And it was not something that only the people of Israel did. You find them in Babylon. You find them in other places all around the earth. As they retained that knowledge of that God, and some of them remained faithful. And so we find them in different parts of the world. And the majority obviously go their own way. But there is always a measure of knowledge of the true God left upon the planet, wherever they're scattered all over the place. And here is this man in Babylon still maintaining that relationship. And of course, he's got also his own problem of covetousness with it. And yet, this is what he says. And obviously, whenever somebody comes to him to ask for either cursing or blessing, this is what he tells them. Look, I myself cannot do anything. I have to talk to the Eternal, to Jehovah, the one that became Jesus Christ, and see what he has to say about it. So this is the righteous part that you see of the prophet. And so he says, and lodge here this night, and I will bring you back word as the Eternal may speak unto me. And he's not talking about Chemosh or Ishtar or any of the pagan gods. He's talking about the only God that was the true God that was dealing with humanity, the God of Noah. You see? The God of Abel, the God of all the righteous men that lived before that. The God of Job and so forth. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The God of Edom, to the degree that Edom still retain that measure of knowledge and understanding and so forth. And this is the one that became later on known in the world of Islam as Allah. That's the personality. And of course, just like the children of Israel, another retain a measure of the knowledge of their forefathers of the God of heaven and earth, and then they mix their own. And so unfortunately, just like the Israelites, their knowledge of Allah is a little bit mixed up. And so this is what it says here. You lodge here this night, and I will bring you back word as the Eternal may speak unto me. In other words, I'm doing His will. I'm His prophet. I cannot do my own thing. And the princes of Moab abode with him, with Balaam, that is. And God, Elohim, it says, and Elohim, came unto Balaam and said, what men are these with you? Now this is sort of a matter of fact. God oftentimes came to him now and then. That's the reason why he was able to be a prophet and pronounce either blessings or curses. And so you don't see anything, something very strange, very unusual here, but sort of common thing, just like, you know, God came to Abraham, you know, in a dream, or to Isaac or Jacob or the prophet. You see sort of a matter-of-fact relationship. So that gives you a background there of this man, of his people. And so Elohim came to him, to Balaam, that is at night, in a vision, and he said, "What men are these with you?" Even though there is no mention here about vision, but it was at night that he came to him. And Balaam said unto Elohim, "Balak the son of Zippor, king of Moab, has sent unto me," because he knows that I'm a prophet that has contact with you, obviously, "and behold, the people that is come out of Egypt, it covers the face of the earth. Now come, curse me them, peradventure I shall be able to fight against them, and shall drive them out." Well, God replies to him, and Elohim says, now that he doesn't know what's happening, and Elohim said unto Balaam, "You shall not go with them, you shall not curse the people, for they are blessed." You see, I bless those people. Now, when people come to you and ask you for a blessing or a curse, if they're pleasing in my sight or displeasing in my sight, based on that, you know, I would allow you either to curse them or bless them, and those things will come to pass. So you see a relationship here with a prophet that is not known as one of the prophets of Israel, and yet when you have the background, you realize that basically talking to a descendant of Abraham that God had a relationship with, just like he had with Abraham and Ishmael. It says about Ishmael, and God was with the lad, you see, Ishmael, and to the degree that Ishmael walked with him, God walked with him. You see, God is not a respecter of person, and that's something that somewhere down way the road, and we read that in the New Testament, and you can, when you consider that, probably Peter was thinking about that too at the time when God came to him. You see, at this time, Jesus Christ, the same person that appears here, and he told him by night, in terms of those servants of Cornelius, the Roman, they were Gentiles, to go and deal with them, you see, not to be bashful about it, not to shun their company because they're Gentiles, because God has people all around the world, you see, that he deals with, and if they're pleasing in his sight, he walks with them, you see. Now, as time went by, the people of Israel developed a very narrow-minded concept of God, thinking that he deals only with them, and they forgot that he's the God of the whole earth. And so that's what he said, you know, whatever I cleanse, don't call it unclean. And so in this case, God had a relationship with this person. And that's why later on he told Cornelius, "Of the truth I perceive that God is not a respecter of persons." You see, that's the way, the attitude that we have developed in our community. Everybody's idol worshiper, and we're the only ones that God speaks through. And a lot of people talk like that. Well, God speaks only through me, you see. And unless you are part of our organization, God is not dealing with you. Well, those are people, you know, who are ignorant, obviously, a very narrow-minded understanding of the Word of God, you see, of the manner in which God deals with the entirety of mankind. If God is aware of every bird all around the earth, and for them there is no issue of being Jew or Gentile, and just a bird, he cares for them, and how much more would he care about human beings? And they're all in his image and in his likeness, and where he sees righteousness in any given nation, he blesses them. Where he sees moral violence and wickedness, he brings curses on them, and he deals with people among them to convey those messages to them, that unless, you know, they behave themselves, God is going to punish them. And there have been prophets, and one of these days all this history is going to be recorded. There have been many prophets all around the earth, before the flood and after the flood, that God dealt with and spoke through, and there was a measure of knowledge and righteousness there. You see, but God didn't choose to record all those things. Well, here it is. God is recording something in detail for 3-4 chapters about one of those prophets who was not an Israelite and yet had a relationship with God. And that's what Peter was saying, you know. "The truth I perceive that God is not a respecter of person, but in every land and every tongue and every nation where people are pleasing in his sight, you see, and fear his name, he has respect for them." And so that was the context of what was happening then. And obviously the Jews had a difficult time with that. But had they paid attention to the scriptures from the beginning until the end, it would not have been so strange for them to realize that. And so that's unfortunately what happens to people even to this very day. And Oftentimes, the leaders are the most guilty in poisoning minds and hearts of their own followers to think, well, God works only with us. Unless you're a part of us, you're out. You see? It doesn't work like that. Now, obviously, you've got to test the fruits and see whether they be of God or not. But cannot make a blank statement, you know. We are the only one, that's it. That's arrogance and ignorance, you know, mixed together.
And we shall stop at this point. Again, Mordecai Joseph, greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.